Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So right now, your family doctor can instantly diagnose a broken bone, right? Or they can prescribe medication for high cholesterol on the spot.
Oh, yeah. Completely routine.
Right. It's just a simple 15-minute visit.
Yeah.
But what happens if they suspect a flaw in your actual DNA? You might be told to sit in the waiting room for 3 years.
Yeah, up to 3 years. It's staggering.
And that is the current reality in several Canadian jurisdictions right now. But it really mirrors a crisis happening in clinics all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at this fundamental problem of success, really.
Mm-hmm.
Clinical genetic testing has become incredibly powerful, and everyone wants it.
Because everyone needs it.
Exactly.
Okay.
But the number of experts who can actually provide it, well, that hasn't changed at all.
No, it hasn't. And that stagnant workforce creates this massive structural traffic jam in the healthcare system. I mean, the demand for genomic insights has just exploded across cardiology, oncology, pediatrics, you name it. But the gates to that information, they're still guarded by a very small, highly specialized group of medical geneticists and genetic counselors.
Which means we have to completely rethink how we access our own medical data. So today, we are exploring the radical plan to dismantle that bottleneck. We want to know what actually happens when your everyday doctor takes over the job of a specialist.
It's a huge shift.
It really is. And our mission for this deep dive is to unpack a highly influential roadmap for this transition. We're pulling our insights from a 2025 paper titled Mainstreaming of Clinical Genetic Testing, a Conceptual Framework, published in Genetics and Medicine.
A very timely paper.
For sure. Today we celebrate the work of Michael P. Mackley, Julie Richer, Kim M. Boycott, and a massive collaborative team across Canada who have advanced our understanding of how to safely decentralize genetic medicine.
And, you know, to really grasp the scale of what this team is proposing, we have to start with that word, mainstreaming.
Right. What does that actually mean in this context?
Well, here, mainstreaming means taking the tools of clinical genetic testing out of those exclusive ivory tower genetics departments, right? And putting them directly into the hands of clinicians who operate entirely outside of that specialty.
Okay, so we're talking about like your local pediatrician or an oncologist.
Exactly, or a family doctor, or even a specialized nurse practitioner.
So bringing DNA data into the mainstream of everyday practice. Now, on paper, that sounds like an obvious win, but putting myself in the shoes of a patient, I'm imagining the reality of that transition is, well, incredibly messy.
Oh, it is.
Because if every hospital is just trying to clear their wait lists by handing out genetic tests to general practitioners, it must be chaos.
It is entirely chaotic. I mean, prior to this framework, we were essentially operating in the wild west of DNA testing.
Wow.
Because the bottleneck is so severe, hospitals everywhere have been trying to mainstream these tests out of pure desperation. But they've been doing it without a map.
Right. Everyone just making up their own rules.
Yeah, exactly. A cancer clinic in Toronto might have a completely different method for handling genetic data than a pediatric ward in Vancouver. They didn't even share a standardized vocabulary for what they were doing.
Which makes it impossible to measure if patients are actually safe, I'd imagine.
Yep. If we connect this to the bigger picture, it's a global issue. You can't evaluate care if you can't even compare apples to apples.
Right. You can't improve a system if you don't even have the words to describe it. And reading through the paper, that seems to be the primary mission of these researchers.
It was. They wanted to build that foundation.
So they gathered this massive consensus group, 35 experts from 20 distinct clinical genetic services across Canada to essentially invent the vocabulary and map out the diagnostic care pathway. And the best way I can visualize the pathway they mapped out is to think of it like a relay race.
Oh, that analogy works perfectly, especially if we consider that the baton they're passing isn't just a piece of wood. It's more like a highly sensitive puzzle box.
Okay, let's unpack this puzzle box relay. In the researcher's model, this race has four distinct stages, right?
Correct.
First is the assessment stage, where a doctor figures out your symptoms and your family history. Second is the pre-testing stage, which involves picking the right genetic test and counseling you on what the results might actually mean.
Right, laying the groundwork.
Yeah. Then third is the laboratory stage, where the lab analyzes your specimen. And the final leg of the race is the post-testing stage, where a doctor sits down with you, delivers the results, and plans your next medical steps.
And the entire challenge of mainstreaming is deciding exactly which runner holds that puzzle box during which leg of the race.
Like, when does the everyday doctor run, and when do they pass it to the specialist?
Exactly. And the genius of this paper is that the researchers realize you cannot have a single rule for every race. Not every genetic test is created equal. So they identified 6 distinct variables that dictate how that baton should be passed.
Because, I mean, ordering a standard blood draw to check for one specific, well-known mutation that's a completely different athletic event than sequencing an infant's entire genome to solve a mystery illness.
Oh, 100%. Let's look at what makes those events so different. The researchers grouped these into 6 crucial variables. First, you have patient characteristics.
Meaning what, exactly?
Well, does the patient have a deeply complex family history of disease spanning generations, or is it an isolated case? Do they face language barriers that make complex counseling harder?
Oh, that makes sense.
Second, disease characteristics. Is this a multi-system condition affecting the brain, the heart, and the skeletal system simultaneously? Or is the issue isolated to just the kidneys?
Because a general practitioner might be totally comfortable managing an isolated kidney issue, but a multi-system failure requires a quarterback.
Precisely. The specialist needs to step in. Then the third variable involves test characteristics, and this is where the science gets incredibly dense.
I can imagine.
Are we looking at a simple DNA test, which is somewhat like looking for a basic spelling mistake in a printed book? Or are we doing a complex RNA functional test?
Which is more complicated.
Much more. RNA testing is dynamic. It's like trying to figure out if the factory printing the book is using the right ink on the right pages at the exact right time. It requires a much higher level of expertise to order and interpret.
Wow. Which naturally leads into their fourth variable, the report characteristics. And I have to admit, this is the one that gives me the most anxiety.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Well, I remember logging into my own patient portal recently to look at some routine blood work. I saw one lipid number flagged in red, and I spent an hour doom scrolling, convinced I was in serious trouble.
Oh, the classic Dr. Google spiral.
Exactly. My doctor later explained it was a totally normal fluctuation. So if I can panic over a simple cholesterol panel, wait, if a non-specialist is doing this, isn't there a huge risk of them misunderstanding a really complex result, like one of those dense academic reports?
That scenario is the nightmare that keeps clinical geneticists awake at night. It really is. The researchers call out this specific fear, particularly regarding something known as a variant of uncertain significance, or a VUS.
Right, a VUS. I've read about these. This is when the lab basically shrugs its shoulders and says, we found a mutation in your DNA, but we have absolutely no idea if it's the thing making you sick or just a harmless quirk.
That is the perfect summary of a VUS. And even for specialists who have dedicated their entire lives to genomics, a VUS is notoriously difficult to interpret.
So if a regular doctor gets that report.
Right. If an everyday clinician misreads that uncertain result as a definitive diagnosis, the consequences are severe. They might initiate an unnecessary irreversible surgery.
Oh, wow.
Or put a patient on a heavy medication they don't need. Conversely, they might look at a variant, assume it's nothing, and send a patient home who actually has a ticking time bomb in their cells.
That is terrifying. But I guess this highlights the 5th and 6th variables they identified, right? Clinician characteristics and system characteristics.
Exactly, because it doesn't matter how simple the test is if the ordering doctor isn't comfortable with genetics, or if the hospital system doesn't give them the time or the financial billing codes to sit and explain a complex result to a terrified patient.
Right, the system has to actually support them.
Yep. Those systemic barriers are why the researchers firmly rejected the idea of a one-size-fits-all solution. You can't just mandate that all pediatricians must now order all genetic tests.
So what do they propose instead?
They built a sliding scale based on those 6 variables. They developed a framework of 4 distinct mainstreaming models, moving chronologically from the most conservative, specialist-heavy approach all the way to complete independence for the everyday doctor.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because this gradient is essentially the blueprint for how we will all experience medicine in the coming decade.
For sure.
Let's explore these 4 models by mapping them onto real-world patient journeys. Let's start with the most conservative approach, Model 1.
Okay, so Model 1 is called mainstreaming up to test selection, or the 2-test model. Imagine a patient who has a highly complex multi-system mystery illness.
Okay.
Under the old system, their family doctor would send a referral to genetics, and the patient would sit on a wait list for 2 years before anything happened.
Just waiting to get the initial swab or blood draw.
Nice waiting. But under Model 1, the everyday doctor runs the very first leg of the relay. They do the physical assessment, they gather the extensive family history, and they package all that clinical data up.
Oh, I see.
Then they send that package to the genetics service. The specialist reviews the file and arranges the actual genetic test before the patient ever steps foot in their clinic.
So the baton is passed incredibly early, but it completely changes the patient's timeline. By the time that patient finally gets their appointment with the specialist, the lab results are already sitting on the desk.
Exactly. They skip an entire unnecessary preliminary visit and jump straight into the care plan.
That is a massive efficiency boost for complex cases.
It optimizes the specialist's time perfectly. Now, moving one step further down the gradient, we have Model 2, the two-result model.
Okay. How does this one work?
In this scenario, the non-geneticist holds the puzzle box a little longer. They do the assessment, they choose the test, they provide the pretest counseling, and they actually order the swab or the blood draw.
Oh, you know, I see this playing out frequently in cancer care. A patient meets with their oncologist, and the oncologist says, based on the type of tumor we're seeing, I'm ordering a genetic panel to look for specific markers.
Yes, oncology is the textbook example for Model 2. The oncologist is entirely capable of running those first few legs of the relay. But once the specimen goes to the lab and the analysis comes back, the medical geneticist steps back in.
Got it.
If that panel reveals a hereditary cancer syndrome, something that affects not just the patient's tumor, but their fundamental DNA and potentially their children's DNA, the specialist takes over to deliver those results and manage the fallout.
Okay, so the everyday doctor does the prep work and the ordering, freeing up the specialist. But the specialist still handles the heaviest emotional and medical lifting at the finish line.
Exactly right.
Okay, let's look at Model 3, which feels like the biggest leap in the entire framework to me.
Model 3 is the two navigation model, and you're correct, this is a profound shift in responsibility. Here, the everyday clinician does almost everything.
Like ordering and disclosing.
Yep. They order the test, they receive the complex lab results, and they are the ones who sit down and disclose those results to the patient. The specialist only enters the room after the diagnosis, and only if the result is a tangled mess that requires expert navigation.
The paper actually provides a fascinating example of this regarding pediatric care and autism spectrum disorder.
Yeah, that's a great example.
Let's imagine a pediatrician evaluating a toddler for developmental delays. It's now standard practice for that pediatrician to order a first-line genetic test called a chromosomal microarray.
And for listeners unfamiliar with that technology, a microarray is basically like running a barcode scanner over the child's entire genome.
Oh, I like that analogy.
Yeah, it doesn't read every single letter of the DNA, but it checks to see if any microscopic chunks of the barcode are missing or duplicated.
Right. And because the medical guidelines for that specific barcode scan are incredibly well documented now, the pediatrician doesn't need a geneticist to tell them to order it.
Exactly.
If the scanner finds a missing chunk, and that missing chunk is a well-known, straightforward cause of developmental delay, the pediatrician handles the disclosure and the care. The genetics team never even knows the patient exists.
But, and this is the key, if that barcode scanner reveals what we call a complex syndromic etiology.
Meaning what?
Meaning the missing chunk of DNA affects the brain, but also indicates the child might develop severe heart defects and kidney failure later in life.
Oh, wow.
If that happens, that pediatrician has hit the limit of their expertise. They disclose the initial finding to the family, but immediately refer them to the medical genetics service to navigate the long-term reality of that syndrome.
So it functions as an incredibly efficient filter. The everyday doctors handle the routine genomic screening, and only the most complicated multi-system puzzles get escalated to the specialized waitlists.
That's exactly how it works. Which brings us to the final tier, Model 4.
The fully autonomous model.
Right. Here, the everyday clinician handles the entire diagnostic pathway from the first symptom to the final treatment. With absolutely zero planned involvement from the clinical genetics team, they run the entire relay race alone.
The paper highlights conditions like hemochromatosis for this model. That's a condition where the body absorbs dangerous amounts of iron, right?
Yes, exactly. And because the symptoms are clear, the blood test is definitive, and the biological mechanism is completely understood, a general gastroenterologist or hematologist can easily order the genetic test.
And read the result. And treat it.
Yep.
Treat the iron overload without ever consulting a geneticist. The puzzle box for hemochromatosis has a very simple lock, and the generalist already has the key.
So if we zoom out and look at this four-cure framework, what does this all mean? How does this actually change the future of a regular doctor's visit? Because empowering a general pediatrician or an oncologist to order and interpret DNA sounds incredibly efficient, but I mean, it also sounds like we're asking a lot of doctors who might have graduated medical school 20 years before this technology even existed.
That is the central friction point of this entire transition. For models 3 and 4 to function safely, we need a massive systemic push to create a genomics-informed workforce.
Right. Everyday doctors need better education.
We're asking them to learn a new language mid-career. But the responsibility doesn't just fall on the doctors. It fundamentally changes the role of the laboratories running these tests, too.
This is the real aha moment for me. If we want everyday doctors to use this cutting-edge science, the labs have to stop writing like cutting-edge scientists.
It's a brilliant paradox. As the technology becomes more advanced, the reporting must become simpler. A genetic report can no longer be a wall of academic text filled with caveats and raw data.
It needs to be readable.
It needs to be an accessible, highly actionable manual. It should explicitly state on the first page, we found this variant, it means this specific disease. Here are the three medical steps you need to take right now.
Yeah, because if you're a busy family doctor, juggling 30 patients a day, you don't have the luxury of spending an hour deciphering a research paper just to tell a patient what their swab means. The lab has to do the translational heavy lifting.
Exactly. Now, this raises an important question about the limitations of this study.
Oh, right. What do they miss?
The authors are very transparent about the hurdles ahead, particularly regarding who built this roadmap. This focus group was overwhelmingly populated by medical geneticists, mostly from a publicly funded Canadian context.
So they lacked broad representation from genetic counselors and the everyday doctors themselves.
Yes. They eventually expanded authorship, but the foundation was laid by the specialists. For this to actually work in a rural family clinic or a busy urban pediatric ward, those frontline doctors must be heavily involved in co-designing how these models are implemented on the ground.
For sure. You can't just mandate a new workflow from the top down and expect a tired nurse practitioner to absorb it flawlessly.
No, you really can't.
But, you know, there was one detail in this paper that really shifted my perspective. Even in Model 4, where the generalist handles the entire diagnostic process autonomously, the specialist genetics team never truly disappears.
No, they don't. Their role just evolves. They step away from the routine diagnostics and focus on the wider impact. Because genetic diseases don't just happen to a single patient, right? They happen to an entire bloodline.
Exactly. If that hematologist diagnoses a patient with a genetic iron overload, they can treat that patient perfectly.
Yeah.
But what about the patient's three siblings? What about their children?
Right. And the paper emphasizes that clinical genetic services will always be the architects of cascade screening.
The family testing.
Yes. The complex process of tracking a mutation through a family tree, testing relatives, and providing the deep reproductive counseling a patient needs if they are terrified of passing a condition on to their future children.
That is such a vital role.
It is, and that insight cuts to the very core of this deep dive. If I could sum it up, mainstreaming clinical genetic testing isn't about replacing geneticists. It is about optimizing their expertise through a flexible four-tier framework. By shifting appropriate genetic testing to frontline clinicians, healthcare systems can drastically reduce wait times while ensuring complex cases still receive specialized care.
It is about putting the right tools in the right hands at the exact right moment.
Yeah.
So what does this mean for the next time you sit in your family doctor's office? Are we approaching a future where your genetic code is as routinely checked as your blood pressure?
It certainly seems that way.
And that leaves us with a massive question about the future. If genetic testing becomes fully mainstreamed across all specialties, how will medical schools need to fundamentally rewrite their curriculums to prepare the doctors of tomorrow?
It's a huge challenge.
That's a paradigm shift that will change the fabric of healthcare. And understanding these unseen frameworks helps you become a more empowered, engaged patient when navigating your own care.
Absolutely.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
To test, to result, to navigation.